where do I begin? Sobriety date, March 6th, 2014. So, yeah, I just celebrated 9 years, and things look a lot different today than they did 9 years ago. And just to tell you a little bit of background, I went to my first AA meeting in 1991 in Costa Mesa, California, and I've been living out there forever. And, you know, I knew right then and there, you know, I belonged, that I was home. But I hadn't thoroughly smashed the idea that I could drink like a normal person, so I spent the next 32 years in and out of the rooms, mostly judge, you know, getting a court card signed, and maybe getting the wife off my back, kids, get my kids, you know, in line. And, you know, I just couldn't get honest enough with myself to really give this thing a try. You know, I was the guy that would sit in the back of the, you know, I'd go to a lot of meetings and stuff, but there's a big difference between being sober and being in recovery, truly. And, you know, I had some sobriety, and I strung some sobriety together, but I was white knuckling. You know, never took the time to get a home group, which, you know, is invaluable. And, you know, never had a service position, had a sponsor that I could manipulate, went through them like like water. And, I mean, how do you fire a sponsor, you know? But I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't take, you know, couldn't find good orderly direction. But, you know, I'm a Navy brat. We moved everywhere. I was the kid that came in halfway through the school year. I dressed different. I talked different. I looked different, you know, and I just wanted to fit in. And somewhere around sixth grade, seventh grade, you know, we were drinking Boone's Farm and stealing dad's beers and stuff like that. And so I got turned on to a joint, and, you know, I was off and running. I was like, this is where it's at. And so, you know, alcohol, you know, progressively got worse and worse. And you know, I like to think that I controlled my drinking, but even back all through high school, I look back, I was able to maintain my grades and stuff like that. And it was only through sports that, you know, you had to have a C average to be able to compete. And that kept me motivated, but I drank alcoholically even then. You know, I went through relationships, you know, I would drink and I would be 10 foot tall and bulletproof, but, you know, a lot of times I was a blackout drinker, and a lot of times my friends were just like, they just would be shaking their head when they'd see me the next day, you know, just going, and I go, what? And go, can you believe what you did? I go, I know, right? And then, you know, and I'm like, usually I'd get up, you know, I'd find out through another friend, like, you know, what happened? And they would tell me that, you know, she threw a beer in your face after you said something to her or whatever. Or I'd be getting into fights, and I'm not really a guy that, I wouldn't generally start a fight, you know, unless I was drinking. And so, you know, got out of high school and went to Tidewater Community College, which was like 13th grade. I was just telling Penny, and I told my dad, I said, after a year, I go, I'm just going to take a year off of school. I'm going to go out to California. I was going out every summer anyway. And, I was surfing all the time and skating. And I'm just going to take a year off, and then I'm going to buckle down and you know, get back into studies. And so 30 years later, you know, I came back here. But I met, fell in love with a California girl, and we have two beautiful children, and I drank myself right out of that relationship after 11 years. And always maintained a job, you know, household. Always thought I was doing my job, you know, and just because you're bringing in a paycheck and paying your bills and you know, I mean, I was playing competitive softball still you know, being the dad, you know, I coached and I did all that, but I was drinking all the time and I was hiding my drinking. I mean, this, most of you guys, you know, I mean, we earned our seats here and you know, I may be sharing part of your story, but I actually thought I was okay. And I look back on that and I was a train wreck. And I am, you know, I was able to bury the hatchet with my first wife. It's my first marriage. And drank myself out of a second marriage too. And that was 9, 10 years ago. I woke up Thanksgiving morning and there was a Dear John letter on the kitchen table, and she'd gone to her mom's again and took the kids with her, and this time it was for good. So of course I went right back into AA, and I got sober for a little while, you know, and I gave it a shot. And actually her stepdad, who's a mentor of mine then and he is now, we do Zoom. You know, the great thing about Zoom, I hated Zoom, but during the pandemic, it was the only thing we had going. And I'm like, shoot, I could Zoom into California, you know what I mean? And see all my old friends. And you know, they moved in with Bud. And Bud, you know, he started taking me to meetings. And I was thinking that if I could just get sober, I could get my wife and my kids back. And that didn't happen, you know. And so she didn't want to come back. And I had to be okay with that. But like I said, I hadn't thoroughly smashed the idea. So I put some sobriety together until I was traveling a little bit too at the time. And I kind of did that, you know, nobody would know if I took a drink right now. And I was still checking in with my sponsor at the time. I was just lying to myself. I remember picking up 6 months when I was still drinking. And that's how sick this disease was. And I actually thought at the time, going back to Bud, Bud said, we all knew you were drinking. You know, it was apparent you were drinking. And, you know, if you drank like I did, you know, it was coming out of your pores. Monday meetings, I used to go to a Monday meeting at 6 o'clock and I was still in bad shape. And talk about how my sobriety's going and stuff like that. And just, you know, like, but I didn't know that they knew. You know, I was thinking, I'm doing this thing. I'm actually pulling it off. And years later, as part of my amends, and when I go back to California now, I go back to some of these same meetings, and they love the fact that they could share these stories with me. And a lot of those guys and gals, I made amends to them, you know, and because I was making a mockery out of a program that is saving countless lives, and it certainly has saved my life. And I know for a fact, this disease will kill you. I lost my brother to this disease 2 years ago. He literally drank himself to death. And there was nothing that any of us could do. And, you know, it was a short time after that, my nephew took his own life. And it was a direct result of alcohol and drug abuse. And you could say fentanyl is in all everything, and that's what happened. And it was, but the bottom line is that this is a family disease. It runs in my dad's side of the family. And, you know, I knew all this, you know, and I knew from that first drink that I had that I was an alcoholic. I drank alcoholically from the get-go. And, I would drink until there wasn't anything to drink. And that's not normal. You know, and this is at an early age. And, I came in here 9 years ago, and for the first time, I came in here for Craig Hanley, you know, and it was completely different, like right out of the gate, you know. I'll tell you how cunning, baffling, and powerful this disease is I was on my fourth step when my own sponsor at the time went out. And that was, I was shell-shocked, you know. Here's a guy who I thought he had it going on, you know. And, secrets will keep you sick. And, he had a dirty little secret. And, You know, that's why that fifth step is so important. You know, I shared, like I said, when I came back in here, that my current sponsor saw where I was at, and I was out on a limb, and I was kind of intimidated for him. I would have loved to have had him with a sponsor, but about 12, 13 years ago, I asked him to sponsor me, and he told me, because my ex-wife is in the other fellowship in NA, but she was going to AA and NA, and she was going to any meeting she could get to. So I was looking right across the table at a success story. And but like I said, I hadn't thoroughly smashed the idea that I couldn't drink. So I knew that the program worked because I was watching it in my own household come to fruition. And but he told me that when you quit following your around in your wife's coattails, you give me a call. And so he saw where I was at, and I finally reached out to him, and he said, I'm going to talk to my sponsor, and I'll get back with you. It's like a week had gone by, and I'm like, I don't know how this works. Maybe I should, you know. So I called him, and he's like, yeah, I talked to my sponsor, and I was just waiting for you to call me. And that's what we do, is we ask for help. And that is the hardest thing in the world. And it was super hard for me. Even though I was ready to get sober, I was still scared to death. And, you know, I didn't know how to stop drinking. You know, you guys can relate to this, where I would swear that I wouldn't get drunk today. And by noon, I'd be hammered. And I just, you know, I couldn't stop. I didn't know how to stop, and I wanted to get help. And you know, there's freedom in the steps, and that's what it's all about. Is these are life-saving steps. And so Wayne spoke last week. He's my sponsor, and he got me this service position. And he said, we're going to start all over again. And this is a guy that, you know, I hold in high regard. He walks the walk and talks the talk in AA. He's been a fantastic sponsor, but he made it clear early on, you know, he's not one of those guys that had to call every night, and thank God. And you know, that gift of desperation, I was willing to do anything to get sober, to stick and stay this time. And so, but he made it clear that he couldn't keep me sober, but he could show me how to stay sober. And that I needed to broaden my base. You can't just always just rely on a sponsor to keep you sober. You need to surround yourself with, you know, with the winners, and go out and introduce yourself to as many alcoholics as you can. And the girls stay with the girls, and the guys stay with the guys initially. But, you know, I brought my friend Penny Lane tonight with me as moral support. And I like to say she's my AA girlfriend. But, you know, we're all in this together, and we're a family. And you know, initially my family was toxic. And I come from a Navy family, and we're the 5 o'clock cocktail bell sounded every night. And it was pretty much back in the day at 18, you could, you know, drink beer and wine. So having that said that, you know, at 16, Dad was buying kegs of beer, and we were having parties, and we had the designated driver thing going, but, you know, that slipped through the cracks. But, you know, the house was a hangout. We played music, and you know, it like I said, it's a progressive disease. You know, we had a lot of fun initially. Again, I drank alcoholically, though. And everybody, you know, I would get the brown, you know, that Eli, you know, every now and again from the folks. But it wasn't until, I guess, 18, I got my first UI. That's when they'd slap you on the wrist and give you a $200 fine. There wasn't a Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. And I didn't even go to an AA meeting. And I don't think I lost my license either. So then, this is one of six. So by the sixth one, what it looked like for me, three different states, Carolina, Virginia, and California. Did I have one in Florida? Can't remember. But the computer hadn't caught up with me yet, you know what I mean? Until I got back to Virginia. And when I got that sixth one here in Virginia, it was a judge who had me like years and years ago on a, it wasn't a DUI, it was a drunken public in Virginia Beach, but it was, you know, some big scene. And my parents were always bailing me out at the time. You know, I'd get a lawyer and get off and do community service and whatnot, and I'd skate by. Well, I wasn't skating by anymore. And so what happened is they got discovery, and they can't, there's a thing called double jeopardy. If you serve time for something, you can't serve it again in the state of Virginia. And so, took an account of my record, and I'm just a good old drunk. You know, I haven't done anything other than just drinking in public, drunk in public, and just a slew of DUIs. But he asked me how old I was, and I told him, and you know, I'm no spring chicken, and he asked me a little bit about my family and everything. And so he says, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to give you 6 months to think about this. And I was stunned, right? And I served half that time. I got out on work duty. But I found out, other than a drunk tank overnight, I found out what it was like to be incarcerated. And this was in Norfolk, Virginia. And that work duty, getting out on cutting grass and weed eating and, you know, using a pole saw and stuff like that pretty much saved me. But, you know, I said right then and there that I need to change my ways. And I got out, and there's a program, Bridging the Gap. And they talk about the percentage of people that are incarcerated and get out. If they get right into a meeting right away, the percentage of your chances of staying sober, clean and sober, are remarkably high. And, you know, I got into that. I went right into a meeting, and you know, I got sober for a little while, and I got the idea of that if I got a sponsor and I started working the steps, I got a home group, you know, got a service position, all these things that had been suggested to me for years and years and years came to fruition. And, you know, it was just like, man, I kept that white chip in my pocket, you know, just everything changed. Because I became willing and open-minded, and you know, and I was, you know, like Wayne says, you don't turn down a service position, and I don't. I share this with other alcoholics that if you call me, I'll call you back. I mean, when the hand of AA reaches out, you know, I have a responsibility to be there for other alcoholics, and that's what we do. And I haven't had a lot of success sponsoring guys, and I used to take it personal, and it wasn't their time, you know. It actually, they helped me stay sober. You know, I've been through four guys that haven't worked. I think I'm a better mentor, and that's what I'm doing, mentoring a lot of guys. And and just recently I had a friend ask me to sponsor him, and my sponsor said not a good idea. And so, you know, I'm still open to, I would love to be able to get into a relationship with another alcoholic and up from a sponsorship level. But I served as a GSR to my home group, so much for the spirit of rotation, which is every 2 years, for the last 7 years. And finally I said, y'all have to, you gotta pick somebody else. And as my alternates fell by the wayside, I just continued to go. And And I took another service position at Riverside Behavioral, which is the front lines. And if that's sobering, I mean, it's scary because, you know, they're in there, they're shaking. I was on the other side of that table. I know exactly where they're at. And they're forced to go to these meetings. But if I could reach one, you know, like tonight, you know, I used to think that I didn't have anything to share. And you know, you go to enough meetings, you hear your story. And I'm sure that some of you can relate to, you know, what I've told you so far. And, you know, this disease is just like I've mentioned before, it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. I am, and this was shared in a meeting that I just left. And we had all kinds of shit. I mean, from 6 months to 13 years to 18 years to 31 years, something like that. A lot of sobriety. But I'm a drink away from being right back where I started. And I ask me how I know, because I have done that. You know, I've strung some sobriety together, and I went out and drank. And, you know, some people don't make it back in here, and I've seen that. And I just had a friend of mine who had, I think he had 12 years of sobriety, and he went back out. And this is a guy I thought he had it going on, you know what I mean? And so, you know, they talk about our disease of being out there doing push-ups. And I believe it, you know. We have a daily reprieve. That's all we have is today. The reading in the daily reflections today, it talks about living in the now. And that's what I do, is I live in the now. That the slogan, the little cliches that I used to laugh at when I would come in here and sit in the back and not share and talk about people behind their back, you know, and, you know, take their inventory, are saving my life now. And so, you know, the one day at a time, truly for me, and the living in the now is, that's what I do, is I don't worry about yesterday anymore. You know, tomorrow's not promised. And, you know, and I just, it's looking pretty good between now and midnight that I'm not going to take a drink. And, you know, this is my second meeting today. I'm up here speaking and sharing my story with y'all. And you know, that's what we do, is we don't take a drink one day at a time. I used to have this old timer, you know, you surround yourself with the winners. And I come into the meetings, you know, and I'm still pretty new, and he'd see me in and out and in and out and in and out, and he would pull that chair out, you know, this time when I came back in 9 years ago. And, you know, they see a change in you, you know, especially if they've seen you coming in good, struggling. And he'd pull his chair out, and he'd say, and every time I'd go, okay, you know, you got to go sit next to him, you know. And he would tell me the same thing every single week. If you don't pick up that first drink, you can't get drunk. And that's what I do, is I just don't drink today. And that's doable for me, you know, for this alcoholic. You know, I used to sabotage myself with my kids. Your dad's quitting, he's never drinking again, you know. And then they would invariably see me getting drunk. And you know, I have a daughter that, you know, she's my oldest. You know, we're thick as thieves, and she's always had my back, and she's my little angel, and she's never given up on me, and she's like, you know, just love her to death on how she's handled my alcoholism, my oldest grandson child is 9 years old, and we're the same age, and she made it clear that I would not have a relationship with her kids. She was pregnant, and if I was going to continue on the path that I was on. And I can't say that Ezekiel, you know, helped save my life, but God works in mysterious ways. All I know is that, you know, when I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him in step three, that was it for me. You know, a lot of people would talk about struggling with step four. Step three was always a tough one for me. Grew up in we didn't have a choice. We had to go to church coming up until we were about 13, 14 years old. And then Dad just said, I'm tired of missing football. Y'all are on your own. And You know, and I still take my mom to church every Sunday, my 89-year-old mother. And I decided to do that when I got sober. And she told me, shared this with Penny the other day, and she said, you know, you don't have to take me to church anymore. And I said, Mom, I'm not going to church for you. I'm going to church for me. And, you know, some people aren't into organized religion. For me, you know, I start my morning and I end my day the same way, you know, and thanking for God for doing for me what I could not do for myself. And it's truly for me anyway. I know that I've tried it on my own, you know, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And so when I became willing to, you know, get honest and turn it over, you know, the miracle happened, you know, and this is a spiritual program, but you know, really what I want to say is when I found God, I found myself. And you know, I get out of the way now, you know. I don't try to complicate things. I don't maybe live the most glorious life anymore. I'm an alcoholic, but I'm a workaholic too, and my career has just taken off, you know. My boss, you know, that I've had for 15 years now, had watched me, you know, in the throes of my disease, and you know, we drank a lot together, and he shared with me about 4 years ago, he's not in the program, but that he hadn't been drinking. I said, I know you haven't been drinking, because he wasn't green in the gills, and I could tell just by that he hadn't. And his wife told me, you know, he just watched how you transform your life. And he decided that he couldn't drink. He didn't want to drink anymore. And we go fishing now, and we have a great time. And there's alcohol all around us. You know, he doesn't feel the he doesn't have the desire to drink. And, you know, on one of those fishing trips, he told me that he said, you're a big inspiration for me wanting to quit drinking. And he goes, you know, I don't have the program of AA. And I said, it's not for everybody, you know, and God bless him, you know, he's been a great boss. He backed me up, when it was, you know, when I wanted to get a little help and outside help and in treatment, he was there with my mom, and you know, that's really what got me is like this time around when I came in, I built a strong foundation. You know, and because I wanted to stay sober, you know, and you know, when the wind started, when the hurricane comes in now, you know, instead of my house crumbling, you know, it's I'm out there boarding up the windows, making calls, you know. The analogy is, you know, I've got a strong base, I've got, you know, that heavy phone. Oh shoot, I don't have my phone on me. My sponsor gave me this little phone that Dr. Bob called Bill with, and I keep it on my keychain, and it's on my bucket list. I want to go to Ohio. But you know that I owe it all to this process we're in called Alcoholics Anonymous. And speaking of kids, my kids are coming in on the 14th, my daughter and her family are coming in. So my two crazy, my six-year-old and my nine-year-old grandsons with my daughter and her husband. And, you know, this is the daughter that never gave up on me. And I have, my son is, my relationship with my son is, I made my amends. You know, the ball's kind of in his court. It's my wreckage of my past. He's still waiting for that shoe to drop. And I created that, you know. He started a beautiful family, he's got a beautiful wife, and they just, you know, Cassidy Ann is 4, and I just had Addison, she's 3 months old, and I haven't met her yet, and so they're not gonna be able to come out. She just got born, but my kids are coming out, my daughter's coming out with her family, and none of this would be happening unless, you know, I was working a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor always shares with me, and I share with you, that there's freedom in the steps. And truly, by the grace of God, you know, I mean, I was able to make it back in here, you know. And you go to enough meetings, it'll ruin your drinking anyway. I remember just being, I would come in for a little while, and I knew, like I said earlier, I knew this is what I needed to do, you know. I mean, it was, I couldn't figure out, how am I going to never not drink again? And I don't think like that anymore, you know. Like I said, it's one day at a time. I was thinking, how do I, for the rest of my life, never have a cold beer after I get off of work? I mean, and usually I wouldn't wait till I got home. I'd have one, you know, between my legs driving home. And, you know, I used to say, one's just right, two's too many, and three's not enough. And now I realize it's that first one, you know. I never could get that. I thought I could control it. I remember, you know, all the different, trying different things, you know. Always hiding it. At the end, I was hiding it, you know. And, you know, my second marriage, you know, ended like my first one, is that they just got tired of my drinking, you know. Still had the job, still had the house, still holding down the bills, and you know, nothing had changed. I just, you know, you know, I just, she's celebrating, Monica has celebrated 13 years of clean, she's clean today for 13 years, and, you know, I owe her a debt of gratitude for, well, kicking me out, and, as hard as that was, out of my own home, and you know, we can laugh about it now. I mean, it wasn't very funny at the time, but it's what I needed. Is I needed that tough love, and when I came back, and this will tell you that, you know, I thought after a couple of years of being sober that our relationship, you know, that it would eventually come back around, and it didn't. And, you know, she had made up her mind that, you know, she'd moved on. And it eventually ended up in divorce. And so even in recovery, you know, I mean, I went through a divorce. I've lost a brother, a nephew. I've gotten divorced, but I didn't feel it necessary to pick up a drink. And back in the day, I would have gotten drunk on all those accounts for sure, especially that last divorce. I was bitter. I was angry. But I'd heard that the number one offender is resentment. And I went to, as Bill sees it, offers a resentment chip. And I had some strong resentment towards her and her brother and everything, but I didn't want to get drunk again. So I went to this meeting. I said, "Hey, I heard you that they had a burning desire." I said, "Yeah, I heard you guys have a resentment chip." They're like, "Oh shoot, yeah, we have." They had to like find it, you know what I mean? Yeah, we have. And you carry it around for a month, and you know, you pray for these people or this person. And nothing changed too much for me, but I brought it back, and you know, I felt better. And what you find about resentments is you're thinking about this person and how you're going to get back and all this, and they're not even thinking about you. I mean, you know, they don't care about you. And you know, the fact that I know that resentment is the number one offender, I mean, that's like half the battle is that. That AA book has already been, we don't have to think about what, you know, we don't have to analyze it. We have to just, you know, take some suggestions and, you know, just follow a straight path and don't pick up. And, you know, I got into a no matter what club. I mean, no matter what the circumstances, we're not going to drink. And, you know, it's just, it's simple things, you know, it's just the little things. Like, you know, meditation and prayer and meditation has been, you know, just a godsend for me. I'm a little on the hyper side, and I've been able to slow down, you know, and take time and think through things. I could never do that before, never. And, you know, like I said, my career's taken off. The promises are, it's, you know, I mean, they're coming true for me, you know. I mean, in every aspect, I love the promises. And I have them on a big cardboard in my, Penny took me, but I kept debating, should I bring my cardboard? I carry this big cardboard thing. It's got the promises on it. And I've stuck it on my wall so many times, there's a million different stab marks. And I'll bring it with me. If I'm working with a guy, I'll bring it. But I like reading that because it's coming true for me. You know, the promises are truly coming true. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into to reaching, you know, that. But sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, they'll always materialize if you work it. Not sometimes, they'll always work. And, you know, that was hopeful for me. You know, coming back in here and always being greeted with, you know, welcome, you know, keep coming back and all those things, you know. And it's, you know, when you first come in here and stuff, a lot of times you don't want to hear that. But, you know, I knew that I was welcome back. You know, if you weren't welcome, I mean, I just, like I said, and I'm kind of starting to ramble, but I really owe where I'm at right now behind this podium to AA. And you know, I'm just so grateful to be able to have recovery in my life. Because it just did not look good for me. I mean, like I said about my boss, you know, he was just on the verge of letting me go, and he did not want to let me go. And, you know, when I got sober 9 years ago, you know, he said, if you get sober this time and you stay sober, we're going to start. I work for my parent company's called Colonial Gardens, and we started backflow services. And I went back to school and I got certified to test backflows. And the business has just taken off. And there is no way in God's green earth that I could have a safety meeting on a Monday with my crew, with trucks, and being responsible, and unless I was sober, you know. And I was always in the background. I never wanted to take a position of, you know, authority, because I couldn't count on myself, you know. I mean, I'd rather be the guy that was third in command. You know, it was easy for me. So if I could call in hungover on a Monday, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Where Mondays now is that I'm leading the meeting. You know, I'm the guy that they're calling. And that's a good feeling, you know. And I'm not getting any younger, and I'm trying to delegate, and it's not the easiest thing in the world. And but it's just a great, you know, it's a great position. I put myself into that. And you know, I thought I'd arrived. I get the best blue chip money can't buy. And my sponsor's just shaking his head. You know, he's just like, now when the real work's begun. But I was so stoked to have, you know, a year of sobriety, a real year of sobriety. And, you know, I got busy and I've never looked back. You know, like I talk about, you know, gave me the football, and I haven't looked back, you know, and I'm running, and I'm going to continue to run and be an encouragement to other alcoholics. And, anyway, I don't really have too much more to say. Do I have a certain time limit that I have here, Steve? Yeah. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.